Michael Gray is a critic, writer, public speaker, a broadcaster, recognised as a world authority on the work of Bob Dylan. He's the author of Song and Dance Man, The Art of Bob Dylan, the Bob Dylan Encyclopedia, and Outtakes on Bob Dylan. And I'm pleased to say that Michael joins me now. Hello, Michael. Nice to see you.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are shortly to appear at the Trinity Theatre in Tunbridge Wells to present Bob Dylan's Greatest Rejected Album Tracks. That's the name of the show. Sounds like a must-see, especially for Dylan fans, and timely because the movie's about to be released this very week. And that's about his early life, I believe. Before we talk about the show, I'm very interested to know, when did your interest start with Bob Dylan and why?
Oh, my interest started 100 years ago. But when I was a student at the University of York in 1964, and my interest in up to that point had been entirely rock and rollers, people like Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis and Chuck Berry and Little Richard and Buddy Holly. And I met this girl who interested me, who was like I was studying English literature. And she said, there is an artist on a whole other level from Elvis Presley. I was rather shocked at that very notion. She said, yes, his name's Bob Dylan, and he's a young American, and he writes his own songs. So, because I was interested in Linda, I accepted the loan of Bob Dylan's most recent LP, which at the time was the fourth one, Another Side of Bob Dylan. The last solo album before he went electric. And it took me a while to get used to his voice. But then, some kind of penny dropped, some kind of hook dropped into me, really. And I have been fascinated by him ever since. And my first book, Song and Dance Man, The Art of Bob Dylan, it was the first time that he'd been taken seriously as an artist. I mean, before that, he'd just been talked about as a folkie or a pop star, which he had become in the mid-60s. He had hit singles and came over in 65 in Chelsea boots and, rather wilder hair than anyone else had at the time. And sometimes I hear people say, I like his songs, but I don't like his voice. And I think, which voice? Because he has so many. I mean, a huge range of voices. And that's one of the things I hope to be illustrating when I do my presentation.
You've become a world authority on his work. Have you actually met him or seen him perform live?
Yes, my first book, Song and Dance Man, it came out right at the end of 72. And he wasn't touring at all at that. And he didn't come back to Britain till 78. And at that point, it was the height of punk in Britain, and Bob was a 30-something-year-old hippie, very unfashionable. And yet, you had to queue all night to buy tickets to see him. And he'd never acknowledged my book. But, I was phoned up one night, and the woman from the press office at the record company said, Bob says, would you like to come backstage tonight and say hello? I said, yes, I think I could manage that. And so that was gratifying. That was great. I may tell the full story of that encounter at my event at Trinity.
I think you should.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen him perform live. The last time was last November when I went to the last of his three consecutive nights at the Royal Albert Hall. He's 83 years old, and this was the last of 200 concerts he gave in 2024. Remarkable. And particularly remarkable is the fact that almost all of his repertoire was from his 2021 album, Rough and Rowdy Ways. And there was just a small scattering of older material. And even that wasn't the greatest hits stuff. It wasn't Blowing in the Wind or Like a Rolling Stone. Less mainstream items than that. He has been remarkable in keeping going.
When you saw him in his 80s, how did it compare to when you saw him when he was a lot younger?
Well, the first time I saw him was in 66 in Liverpool.
Oh my goodness.
He did the first half of the concert was solo, just him and the acoustic guitar and harmonica. And then the second half, he brought on the people who became known as the band. And that was extraordinarily exciting, yes. I didn't find him exciting at the Royal Albert Hall last November, but he was in good voice. And I think I didn't find him exciting because I knew exactly what he was going to do. I admire the way that he is not just settling for a Golden Oldies tour.
Well, time for some music. Let's take a short break. Do you have a favourite track that we can try and play for you?
Yes, I want you.
I'm talking to Michael Gray. He's writer, public speaker and broadcaster and recognised as a world authority on the work of Bob Dylan. He's shortly to appear at the Trinity Theatre, Tunbridge Wells, to present Bob Dylan's greatest rejected album tracks. So tell us about the show itself then, Michael. What can we look forward to? It says rejected tracks, so that sounds intriguing. How's that going to work?
Yeah, well, Bob Dylan goes into a studio like any artist who can afford plenty of studio time. All through his career, really, except for the first album, I think. He goes into the studio and he records a whole bunch of songs, mostly his own compositions, of course. And then afterwards, when the sessions are over, he chooses which tracks to release. And sometimes later, seeping out into the world, we get outtakes, i.e. other versions of songs that are on the album. But we also sometimes get tracks that he recorded and then said, no, I don't want that on the album. He rejected them, but they're great. I mean, in the case of the ones I have chosen, each one is just a great rejected track that almost any other artist in the world would say, if that was the only track I've ever achieved, it would be something I was proud of.
It wasn't somebody else who rejected them, like his record label or whatever. It was his decision to...
Oh, no, no. He's been in total charge of what goes on his records for 60 years now. The fourth album, the one that I first got introduced to him with, that was called Another Side of Bob Dylan. That was the last time that the record company chose a title for one of his records. Ever since then, he's chosen the titles, he's chosen the tracks, and he's decided when he's finished and is ready to release it. What I'm doing in this talk is playing a lot of music. The tracks that I'm playing are like bus stops. I know I have to call that, but between those bus stops, I can range how I feel spontaneously. I don't read from notes. It's not a dry lecture at all. And the tracks themselves range from a rejected track from his second album back in 1963, right through to far, far more recent material than that. And so I believe that it's a thoroughly entertaining show. And I certainly hope it goes down well. You know, I have a whole previous history of being in Tunbridge Wells, and that's to do with when I took a job as head of press with United Artists Records, and one of the artists on their label they had just signed was Jerry Rafferty. He didn't have a manager because he'd been entangled in his previous group, Steeler's Wheel, with some unpleasant American heavies. And when he finally got shot of all that, he made this album, cheaply, City to City, which happened to include Baker Street. And when that became a huge hit, the album ended up selling 4.5 million copies. And so he needed a manager. And because I had interviewed him for the record label, he came to know me and to trust me. And one day he said, would you like to be my manager?
Was he easy to work with, Jerry Rafferty?
Most of the time. I mean, basically, he didn't want to do anything. And therefore, it wasn't tremendous fun. He would not tour America. I mean, people were asking me all the time, and I had to just say no. And when we were in Los Angeles, we were invited to a party by a very famous pair of pop songwriters. It would have been fun, but he said no. So he was essentially very shy, and that's partly why he didn't want to tour. But also, he was deeply suspicious of the United States, partly based on his previous experience. The reason he came to Tunbridge Wells was because when all this sudden success arrived, he was still living up in Scotland. So he kept having to sort of commute from Glasgow to London to do all this business stuff. And he just got tired of it. And he had a brother who lived in Tunbridge Wells. So Jerry knew the town.
I didn't know that Jerry Rafferty was a resident of Tunbridge Wells.
First of all, he lived in Frant. And, he was in town a lot. He wanted the management office to be in town. And so we set it up in Grosvenor Road opposite the Rose and Crown pub.
So going back to Bob Dylan and the show then, Michael, do you have any surprising facts? Something that you've discovered that was a surprise to you, or an interesting little anecdote? Anything that you can share with us?
Well, it was a surprise to me to meet him. You see, I've never written his biography. I've never wanted to write about his life. It's the work that interests me. And in the end, it's the work that matters. It's the work that got him a Nobel Prize in Literature in 2016, and so on and so on.
You can see Michael Gray and Bob Dylan's greatest rejected album tracks on Saturday, the 25th of January. That's at the Trinity Theatre in Tunbridge Wells. Go to the theatre website or their box office for details and for your tickets. Sounds like it's going to be a great evening, especially for Bob Dylan fans. We need to say goodbye with a Jerry Rafferty track. So what can we play?
You could, of course, play Baker Street, yes.
Michael Gray, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck with the show. Oh, it's brilliant for you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.